Good morning, everyone. Thank you very much for coming early. We all noted that the traffic was lighter, so maybe there's a message in that. But we had a very, as you remember, a full agenda last time, and we also are going to have a committee meeting following the board meeting scheduled, posted for 10, but we don't have to, although I don't know we'll go any longer than that, we don't have to use that as a deadline. That committee meeting can start any time after 10. So let me call the meeting to order and ask the secretary to call the roll, please. And by the way, Director Towns had a death in his family, and he couldn't be here, and Director Gonzalez had a professional meeting that was in conflict, so they both have notified us that they couldn't come.
Governor Quinn, Secretary Schneider, Chair Wolf, here. Director Bank?
Here.
Director Darcy?
Here.
Director Gonzalez? Director Peterson?
Here.
Director Reddick? Director Sweeney?
Here.
Director Towns? Director Wisner?
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you, and we are expecting Director Reddick to come. We have one request for public comment, Rob Sherman. Thank you. And you know the rules of the road here.
Yes, watch where you go like that.
Well, no, I'm not going to give you a signal. You can self-moderate today.
Right. Rob Sherman, Box 7410. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, now that the cheerleaders from Lake County have gone home, it's time for a little reality check. I've been in Buffalo Grove for 28 years, and I've been to many village board meetings where developers have come in, and they have said things such as, we absolutely must have a 30% variance in the zoning density, or we must have 25% less parking in order for this project to work, or we have to cut back the setback from 20 feet to 2 feet, and the project absolutely won't work unless we do all these extreme things. And the village board, on a consistent basis, has always said, no, 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 you have to comply with the zoning, you have to make it reasonable. So the point on this part is that the Lake County people said, oh, we have to have all these things, we have to have 45 miles an hour. No, you don't. You have to have two lanes in each direction. No, you don't. We know what happens over at the Eisenhower, what's known as a hillside strangler. So just because they say you have to have all these things in order to make the project work, that isn't true. Tell them no. Tell them no on a bunch of these things. But the thing that I find to be the most outrageous of all their proposals came on page 19 of their 100 or so page report. This pertains to using pricing for congestion relief, and it says in pertinent part that they want to impose congestion pricing on the Cook County portion of Route 53. Why? To encourage drivers to make changes to more efficient travel behavior. These efficient behavior changes include shifting travel to off-peak instead of rush hour. Ladies and gentlemen, the good people of Lake County don't approve of the travel behavior of the people of Cook County on the road in Cook County that we paid for with our motor fuel taxes. So what they want to have you do is to kick the peons from Cook County off of the Cook County portion of Route 53 so that the rich people of Lake County don't have as much traffic to deal with on the Cook County portion of Route 53. So of all the proposals that they've made that you ought to tell them no, I ask that you make this the first proposal that you tell them no on. We're not going to have the people of Lake County deciding that they don't approve of the behavior of the people of Cook County, so they want the toll authority to jam the people of Northwest Cook County with high tolls to change our behavior because it's inconvenient for the rich people of Lake County to have to deal with all the peons of Cook County driving on Route 53 in Cook County. Thank you for your time, and I look forward to seeing you again. But not at every meeting. I'll pick my spots on one to pop.
As you know, this report
yes, ma'am.
Will go to Director Wisner's Strategic Planning Committee meeting. And that, the issue you raised and a lot of others will be debated, discussed there, and come back as recommendations to the full board.
And what is the group that does this?
This is a committee that Director Wisner chairs, the Strategic Planning Committee of the Lola.
And how does the public keep track of when that committee will be meeting?
It's posted the way all of our other meetings are posted. If you want to be notified, you can talk to Trinise, and she'll put you on the description.
We've met.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good, thank you. Are there any questions or comments on that? Okay, let's turn to the agenda then, the approval of the minutes of the regular board meeting and the executive session of the June 28th meeting. Are there any comments on that?
Motion approved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, the minutes are approved. Abstentions? None. I'm sorry. We have some committee reports. We have a number that have been delayed. And why don't we start with the Strategic Planning Committee with the June report, Dr. Wisner?
Sure. Strategic Planning Committee met in June, and our discussion centered largely on the process or policies relative to cost sharing. And we spent a fair amount of time in that context talking about interchanges. And in that discussion, we talked about both new interchanges as well as half interchanges that were perhaps candidates for completing. And in that discussion, we looked at the current situation. And we know that in a lot of cases in the past, in the recent past, and just the past, I guess, the funding for those, we've always demanded that the local jurisdictions participate. And we think that's a real key element that we would wish to preserve going forward without fail. It's important that the local communities have investment, skin in the game, as it said, and that they that certainly indicates their commitment. And certainly when we all know when we invest, we tend to follow through. So that's an important element. On the other hand, we realize that some of the funding sources that we've had in the past available for these types of projects are diminished or non-existent at this point. We're concerned about, let's say, take the Huntley project, for instance. 25% of that cost was covered by IDOT. We're not sure, as we look into the crystal ball, whether the state and federal sources that have traditionally been there to help supplement these projects and make them possible will be there to the extent that we're familiar with. So part of what we're looking at is to see if there's ways to tweak the system so that the cost sharing element remains, so that we're fair to those who came before, but that we also perhaps come up with a slightly different way of allowing some of these improvements to go forward in over the next 10 years, 5 years, when we're faced, I think, with a little bit different environment for those types of projects. So we're studying that right now, trying to figure out a way to see if there is indeed a way to make that happen. So that has been a large part of our discussion there. The other thing that will come up in our upcoming meeting, as indicated by our chair just a minute ago, was that we will begin, we've accepted the report on the Route 53 expansion, and the Strategic Planning Committee will begin looking at that. And sorting through that, I think there was a clear indication when the folks were here from in support at our last meeting that one of the concerns is, how will this get paid for? Etc. So we'll be certainly looking at that very closely, and we'll begin sorting through the recommendations and basically, I think, questioning those in a positive sense and saying, do these test out and are these things that are feasible or not? So that will begin in our next meeting. And if there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer that. Otherwise,
I do have one question. Practical deadline on this question of the interchanges? Does the Move Illinois program prompt us to have to make a decision about the cost sharing part, or can we just function under the existing policy?
until we decide if we need to reduce our policy.
I mean, I think we certainly can and plan to continue to function under the existing policy, but I do think that the question has been raised now in this discussion in June. I think our plan is to follow up with some additional information and discussion in August, in addition to whatever else the committee takes up at the August meeting. I do think that it's something that should be resolved in the next couple of months or between now and the end of the year as a goal, because, you know, if something is going to change, I think while there may be very legitimate and important reasons for those changes, you also don't want to catch communities off guard that are kind of on the bubble. That may have done it one way, and then you have another community coming in shortly thereafter doing it differently. So I do think we want to get out in front of it as quickly as possible. But now is the time, with the really, you know, start of the program, it's the first year, and we're ramping up our efforts. This is absolutely the time to look at this policy and make some of these changes. And, you know, there may be compelling operational reasons for us too, particularly as we think out buildings. Particularly as we think about building out some of these interchanges that are just partial streets down, there are customer impacts and other things that we should look at.
Right. No, I think it's our intention to try to resolve the issue.
So sometime, certainly before the end of this calendar year,
we will
come up with a recommendation to the board.
Sure. Definitely.
Any other questions? Director Peterson?
The Finance Committee met on July 18th. And we're under finance. There were two items the committee approved. One, the first item was a renewal of a contract with Bank of America for banking services and armored car services with Brink. We authorized the fourth year of another one-year extension on that contract. The contract was procured through the RFP process led by the Office of the State Treasurer for services for the tollway, and the tollway did have some input also. The second item is the renewal of collection agency contracts with Harrison Harris and NCO. Agencies pursue collection of property damage claims, violations, payments, and other miscellaneous debts. Each is compensated as a percentage of amounts collected. Collection fees are very competitive, 13 to 14% for non-litigation, 21% when they're litigated. We recommended the renewal period, which was a two-year renewal period, also for the full board to review today. Procurement presented eight items, which the committee approved and placed on the consent agenda. And I believe that John is going to make a brief presentation regarding one of the items having to do with services or office supplies. Can we do it now or later?
I can do it now. Thank you, Director Peterson. Good morning, directors.
Good morning.
As Director Peterson had pointed out, there was some discussion last week in the Finance Committee in regards to the office supply award that CMS had made on their statewide master contract. Mainly, there was a huge price disparity among the three responsive bidders. So I just wanted to talk through the background of that contract and go over more specifics on how it was awarded. I'll sit from my chair right here since I only have a couple slides today. So background information, how did this come about? CMS identified a need for a statewide master contract. All agencies under the governor purchased office supplies, so they created a master contract for these supplies. And, you know, once they put the statewide master contract in place, it's not only available for all the state agencies under the purview of the governor, but also local governmental entities and jurisdictions. So once they identified the need and identified all the items that are commonly or routinely purchased among all the state agencies, they issued a competitive invitation for bid that was published on the Illinois Procurement Bulletin. Once they received all the bids and evaluated the procurement, CMS then awarded the procurement to the lowest responsive bidder, which is PD Mortison Enterprises. The CPO's office and Springfield Detective Ethics Commission, they approved the award, and so too did the Procurement Policy Board. This vendor should be noted as a BEP registered vendor. They are 100% African American owned company. So now, how is this awarded? So there was two different categories that the state had put into this bid. The intent was always to only award this to one vendor. Lower administrative costs, plus the winning vendor has to have an online ordering tool available for all agencies to utilize. It'd be more difficult to have, you know, multiple vendors with multiple online ordering tools. So the core items, what are the core items? vendors had, the CMS in their solicitation put a list of 325 line items that are routinely purchased items across the whole state. Vendors were instructed to put a per unit price on each line item, and what the state did is they took that per unit price, times it by the estimated usage to get the total per line, they added up the total, and that was the total bid price for the core items. And PD Morrison, as we can see from the second bullet under the core items, they were the low bidder, 237 or over 70% of those items. So some examples of a core item are everyday pens, pencils, paper clips, legal pads, file folders, things in that nature. And again, they were the low bidder on over 70% of the items. Non-core items, they looked at all the three responsive bidders' electronic catalogs, and they took 200 items that had the same SKU numbers across the board. And of that, P.E. Morrison was the low bidder on the majority of those items as well. Not to get too much into details, but they were so low on the core items that CMS even took P.D. Morrison's prices that they submitted on the non-core items and compared that to if the other two responsive bidders had a price of zero, and P.D. Morrison would still be the low bidder in total and have to be awarded the contract. And some examples of the non-core items are desk lamps, floor mats, strapping tape, packaging tape, and the like. And just to add something to this, if you take these two components together, there was a protest because of the disparity of pricing. One of the other bidders that wasn't the lowest bidder submitted a protest saying there's no way that this bidder could offer these prices. The protest was submitted to the CPO's office in Springfield. They reviewed the protest, they did a whole analysis, they recalculated, they re-added all the numbers, and they are the low bidder. There's a bid firm time of 3 years, since this master contract is for 3 years. They must hold their pricing for 3 years. The CPO's office didn't find any reason not to believe that they cannot offer those prices. Therefore, they do recommend the award. Thank you. That's all.
Where's this company located?
They're in Texas.
Well, that tells me it's not something over which we have any control, right?
No, we are required by a JCAR rule to utilize the master of contracts that are established by the state.
Well, let the record show we were curious, and we hope that they can keep going for 3 years.
I do, too, because this will provide, I believe, significant benefit to the state in terms of the low prices that they did submit in the bid.
Thanks for clearing that up.
Sure.
I just like to thank John because he did do the extra work and reached out on it. It is, as you know, not something that we, sit or are involved intimately in the review process. We do supply kind of our list of needs, but, ultimately it was CMS's purview.
Thanks,
John.
Thank you.
Two other items in finance. One was engineering. Under engineering, we had one item which was recommended for final release of retainage. All work on the contract had been completed. Paul mentioned basically during that conversation there was a small contract that we had out for minor roadway repair and patching up northwest part of the state up by Rockford, and fortunately there was no bids that were submitted on that, so we're looking into reevaluating how we can get the work done, either by combining the work or re-advertising and doing a little more outreach on that work with patch and seal. Legal, there were two items, Land Act and Bond Council, and I believe that we have referred those to executive for today also. That's it.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Any questions for Director Peterson? Director Reddick is evidently on his way, but I think what I'd like to do is just come back to him and his report when he comes. Why don't we go ahead? I don't have any additional items.
Okay, great. Well, I just have a couple of informational items, and then we can get into several presentations. Just as an addition to what Director Peterson reported on, the collection agency contracts, as you know, are going to be renewed. For those of you who were not at the Finance Committee last week, we also did announce that we're going to be starting the RFP process to solicit for new vendors during this two-year period. It does take some time to get through the competitive bid process, as we all are aware, but it also takes some time in this case to integrate with our technology systems. We need to have them integrated with our violation system so that we can translate back and forth, and so that's something that we're going to be starting the process on this year. We want to time it in such a way that when the new system that we have comes online, you know, we can kind of seamlessly integrate, you know, whatever companies ultimately are the ones who have been chosen at that time. I'd like to introduce John Mickey. John, wave to everyone.
Hello.
Yes, hello.
Wave to the camera.
Wave to the camera. You're on television. If you haven't already met him, this is our new chief of administration. John brings more than 25 years of broad human resource leadership expertise with both private industry and the nonprofit organizations and government organizations. He has worked for Motorola, Argonne National Labs, the National Center for Food Safety and Technology at IIT, and most recently, I think, Palladium Energy, correct? So we're very excited. You have been much anticipated here at the Tollway, and I'm trying to contain Mike Stone's enthusiasm because he's been doing that job bless his own for some time, but we're all very happy to have you and look forward to working with you.
And as the directors remember, Christy put this at the top of her list for what she was going to accomplish and be evaluated on, so we're checking that
So we're very happy to have you.
I'm ecstatic to be here. Thank you very much.
Good. Thank you. We also wanted to let you know that the Illinois Tollway has joined with the Illinois Department of Transportation to promote a new safety campaign aimed at reducing the number of fatalities on Illinois roadways. Traffic fatalities had been on the decline for several years, but this year the number has risen. So far in 2012, 532 people, I actually think that number is slightly increased now, largely because I've seen it on the sign, have died in crashes throughout Illinois. So what we are doing now is that you may have noticed as you were driving on some of the interstate highways on the overboard message signs, you see the number of traffic fatalities this year and some safety reminder, reminding people not to text while driving, to slow down, to wear their seatbelts. So we are now participating in that program and are going to be doing the same type of messaging on our own roadways. Safety is our primary concern, and we want to make sure that drivers are constantly aware. It's easy to forget as you're driving on some very new roads, in our case, particularly in traffic-free conditions, that there are a lot of safety precautions that you should take to protect your life and the lives of others. So some of the messages are, again, don't text and drive, save a life, buckle up, stay off the phone in work zones, and don't drink and drive. So things that I know we all know, but you know, those reminders sometimes are helpful for people. So we hope the initiative is going to help, and we are excited. I shouldn't say excited, but we are happy to be working with IDOT on this important campaign. So,
may I ask a question? Is the experience that during construction phases, I mean, in areas where there is construction, there are more or fewer accidents? Do we know?
Accidents tend to go up in construction. Mm-hmm. It's the narrow lanes, the slowing traffic, driver distraction, looking at the construction. The frequency is lower.
So that would be something where we would probably try to be even more aggressive than...
We are. We have considerable extra resources in the construction.
Thank you. Any other questions,
anyone? I think that's all for my items. I'll just introduce the next presentation. As you know, the Program Management Office, or PMO, is responsible for keeping the Tollway's capital program on time and on budget. This is actually a presentation that we were going to do last month, but because of all of the public interest in some of the items that we were going to be talking at last month's board meeting, there was a lot of public comment and public engagement, and we decided to defer the presentation to this month. So, but last month we did award the contract to HNTB, and we're pleased that this contract will ultimately result in a net cost savings of $23 million over the next 5 years. We think that, again, we're transitioning, as you may recall, transitioning some of the staff that at one time we may have gotten through the PMO contract to tollway staff, and we think that there'll be some savings as a result of that. Because it is a 15-year program and there's an extended and long-term need for some of these folks. So this contract, like other professional service contracts, was awarded through the qualification-based selection process. So we're going to talk a little bit about that today. The qualification-based selection process is legally mandated and requires state agencies to select design professionals on the basis of demonstrated competency and professional qualifications. Price cannot be considered. Proposals are submitted and evaluated based on qualifications of the firms and the quality of the proposals. Next is a presentation summarizing qualification-based selection and providing an overview of recent enhancements that we've made to this process. We have gotten a tremendous amount of interest as we've put out professional service bulletins and are getting a lot of statements of interest. So we are making some changes and refinements to the process to make it more efficient, but also some additional steps and controls in the process. So Paul, go ahead.
So I think there were questions from some of us about how, if it's not based on price, what's it based on? So this is basically to try to get to the bottom of that, and how do we avoid them?
It's a little bit on the PMO, so everybody's familiar with the important role that they're going to play, but also the qualification-based selection process.
So good morning, directors. And Christy covered a lot of the key points of this presentation, but hopefully I'll be able to provide you with a few additional details. And of course, if you have questions, I'm ready to answer them. And just one second to go back to Chair Wolf's comment about construction zones. We recently brought all of our contractors and our construction managers and even our designers in, and we had like a kickoff meeting for the Move Illinois program. We plan to have these periodically with them. They were all very well attended, and safety of the motoring public and of our construction workers who are actually doing all this work for us was a top priority or a main topic in those meetings, and we made it clear, just like the captain said, those construction zones do present additional challenges for us on the safety side. So this presentation, as Christy mentioned, I'm going to cover three topics. The PMO contract, which the board approved last month. I'm going to discuss the qualification-based selection procedure. And I'm also going to mention how we're updating and modifying our internal process for how we do our consultant selection so that we can improve or enhance our documentation and also our process selection. Improve our documentation and just make sure that it's all explained in the process. So the PMO contract is a 5-year contract. It's just under $70 million. It's exactly $69.89 million. It's one of those foundational contracts that we talked about back in March that are critical and necessary to delivery of our program. What the PMO does is they focus on our program as a whole. So they're not looking at each individual project. They're looking at the program as a whole, and they're very critical to helping us deliver quality work on time and on budget. We had a very good experience utilizing a PMO in our last program, the congestion relief program. We did accomplish what we set out to do and deliver $6 billion in improvements on time and on budget. Their primary task, or the way that they help out the tollway, are they help guide the program delivery by helping us lay out which projects will get done and in what order. That's that master program schedule, which I have referred to and shown to you all before. The PMO also helps us manage and track the progress on all these individual projects. We have a lot of work going on, a lot of different projects all occurring simultaneously. They gather up the information for us. An example of that, I believe, is you're going to see our quarterly report this month, which is going to give you a lot of detail on how the program is progressing. And finally, the PMO helps provide us with information that we need to make good decisions timely. This is a fast-paced program. Our goal is to deliver $15 billion worth of improvements, $12 billion worth of improvements over the next 15 years. I don't want to make it any harder on myself. So if you do the math, that's $2 million a day. It takes a lot of work to keep that moving, and you have to make a lot of decisions. So I did also want to point out HMTB, they have established great track record with us on the CRP program. It's a very large project in itself. However, I wanted you to know they do have several subcontractors or subconsultants that work with them, and they utilize 8 DBE partners. They are achieving a 30%, or they have committed to a 30% goal on this. So $21.4 million out of that roughly $70 million contract is going to go to their DBE partners. We know HMTB also, they take a very active approach in involving their DBEs and their work, and they do hold monthly all-hands meetings and quarterly training sessions, which is focused on helping these small companies grow and get better in their business practices, marketing, and technology. I want to also acknowledge, there's no getting around it, this contract is a very large contract. However, I want you to also know that because of the integrated nature of this program management office work, breaking the contract into a lot of smaller pieces isn't going to help us achieve what we want, which is, you know, on-time quality delivery of work under budget. We did, however, shift some of the scope items to other smaller contracts. There is a slide in the appendix here, which I can go to, but we roughly broke out like $13 million that, you know, we could have probably included in the PMO contract. But one of the foundational things that we're doing different with this PMO contract versus what we had done under the congestion relief program is we negotiated based on transferring some of the roles that the PMO staff would have normally done for us to internal tollway staff. So this slide lays out all the new positions that we are going to need over the next 5 years. It's roughly 35 new positions that are required. More than half these positions are going to be coming on board, hopefully, by August of next year. I also am very happy to see the addition of Mr. Mickey to our staff. I plan to be his best friend. But this transitional approach to staffing, it does have some risk for us. And it is in direct contrast to what we did under the CRP. They have a very limited staff right now, and we plan to actually transition it downward over the next 5 years. But there are benefits too, and first and foremost is we hope to save some money. And roughly this approach is going to allow us to save about $23 million on what we had anticipated we would have to spend on this contract. So we were thinking more in the $110 million range, and we're bringing it in at $70. We know it's going to help us build out our in-house staffing and expertise, which is a good thing. It's also going to support our succession planning, so we're going to have more depth in our own staff to do this work. The PMO fee is $70 million, but it is spaced over 5 years, and it's based on this transitional approach. Staffing is limited, as I mentioned, and we're going to transition downward. We know that big programs take a lot of people to deliver it, and you know, we're going to work very closely and stay on top of this to see that, you know, we are bringing on people timely, and that's the primary message. We need to make sure that our hiring is timely, because there is going to be a need to have these people on board to do this work for us. The options, you know, if we're not successful in bringing on people on board, would be, you know, we would have to come back and supplement this contract, or we would have to, you know, possibly task some of the work to another contract. So I just wanted you all to know that going in. Qualification-based selection. Any questions? Yes.
I have one question. Do we have any sense normed against national other programs? What percentage is done with an inside?
We do. That we had that slide in here also. I'm not sure.
Okay. Set up
if it's in the appendix now, but I know that definitely the percentage that we have dedicated towards this PMO effort is well within the national average ranges, and I could provide that slide to everyone.
I thought I'd seen it somewhere.
It's there.
Okay. Yes, it is there.
So that we're at the low end.
Yes.
And then, does this fluctuate depending on the size of the programs that are going on, or once you get to your staffing do agencies usually keep them? Is there an attrition that happens when you end a big program, or do we never end programs, we just do the next one?
Well, in our congestion relief program, there was a definite, and I think that's also on a slide here, there was a increase in PMO staffing as the number of projects and the amount of dollars in the program were increasing. And there was also, we had a big transition downward at the end of it. The blue lines indicate the PMO staffing levels, so you can see how they definitely fluctuated with the amount of work that was going on in the program. And we did make some aggressive reductions in the PMO staff as the project CRP program started to wind down. And you see the marked difference in how we're taking the approach during the Move Illinois program. The Move Illinois program, the level of activity is going to increase, but we're actually going to attempt to decrease the PMO staffing required. And that is going to be made up by in-house totally people.
Do you have a large number of retirements coming up, Paul, in that towards the end of this project, where these guys can be transitioned in, depending on their quality and their performance, and into a more permanent position?
Yes, and that was the idea behind, you know, it gives us some succession planning. We're bringing on some new people. They're going to be able to get trained and get experience from our people and also PMO staff, and then eventually be able to move up and take on more roles, bigger roles at the tollway.
Thank you,
Nancy.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay, anything else on that? Okay.
So the qualification-based selection process, I wanted the board to know that all of our professional engineering services, or all the professional services that we procure through the engineering department, are based on a qualifications-based selection process. The QBS process is not only an industry standard, it's also a requirement by law. You see our Illinois Public Act there referenced. QBS is designed to ensure open and fair competition. It's really a two-step process. And the first step, we make a selection, and it's based on the qualifications of a firm to meet a specific project's requirements. And the second step is where we sit down with the firm and we actually come to a mutual negotiated contract amount. The tollways, so price is not completely removed from the process, but it is after you do the selection of the most qualified firm. The tollway selection process is very comprehensive. We advertise all of our professional services through a professional service bulletin. That's a public advertisement. It goes out to the complete engineering community. We also have it on our website. You do need to have an IDOT pre-qualification in certain categories in order to submit a statement of interest on that bulletin. So the engineering firms, they go to IDOT, they do get pre-qualified in the different areas of study. But that really is all they basically have to do in order to qualify to do our work. So we do have a very large group, luckily, in Illinois, a large group of engineering companies that are capable and qualified to do our work. They submit statements of interest to us. We then have an evaluation of those statements of interest and a ranking. We have a selection committee that comes that meets to discuss these statements of interest and decide who are the top firms to do this work, and they're actually obligated by law to list the top three in ranked order. And you begin negotiations then with the number one firm. If we weren't able to come to a mutually agreed upon contract fee and final scope, then we would move on to the second one and so on. You all get involved in the process after the selections are made. I come to the board after the negotiations are done. I make a recommendation to the board on whether or not we should award the contract to